Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Cigna Drug and Alcohol Awareness Series Conference. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Amy Papageorge. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Cigna's Drug and Alcohol Awareness Series. My name is Amy Papageorge, and I'm a therapist and care manager for the outpatient alcohol team at Cigna. Due to the format of this seminar, you will not be able to ask questions during the talk, but there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. Following today's presentation, you will be asked to participate in a brief five-question survey so that we can get your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask our speaker questions regarding her talk. Please limit your questions to the seminar topic. If you have specific questions regarding substance abuse treatment or your policy, please contact the outpatient team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. There is a PowerPoint for today's seminar available online. To access the PowerPoint, go to www.cigna.com/substanceabuse and then click on today's presentation. Again, that's www.cigna.com/substanceabuse and then click on today's presentation. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Barbara Krantz. Dr. Krantz is the medical director at the Hanley Center in Florida. She is a diplomate of the American Board of Addiction Medicine and an expert on the national prescription pain medication epidemic and the medical science behind the disease of addiction. Dr. Krantz?
Thank you, Amy. And thank you to everyone that's listening. I hope that today's presentation will be informative for you and give you some clarity on issues with prescription drug abuse, especially in the light of chronic pain. So my specific objectives for today is to give you an overview of where we are nationally and certainly in the state of Florida with prescription drug abuse, but also what we're really seeing with patients walking into treatment centers and the dilemma that they face when they have chronic pain. So that's essentially what I'm going to talk about. That's essentially what the learning objectives are. I am going to present different clinical options that people have available and maybe even different medical management than the prescription narcotics specifically. So if we look at an overview, I think anybody that has, you know, read the newspapers or looked at the news, that we have a growing trend with prescription drug abuse. And when I say prescription drug abuse, we're really talking about three different classes of drugs. We're talking about the narcotics, the prescription opioids or opiates, the pain pills. We're talking about the benzodiazepines, and that's the sedative hypnotic class. Those are the drugs like Xanax, Ativan, Valium, Klonopin. And then we're talking about the stimulants, mostly like Ritalin and Adderall. What we've seen both medically and nationally is that even from 2008, that the unintentional drug poisonings in the United States, roughly 90% of the poisonings are a result of drug exposure, and over 40% of those poisonings were from prescription narcotics. So is there, you know, my question as a physician, as a doc, is like, you know, is there a correlation with what's been going on in our country? I think one of the answers from a real strictly medical point of view is that back in the late 1990s, the Joint Commission, which is an accreditation body for hospitals and for treatment centers, started having physicians look at chronic pain as well as checking like blood pressure, pulse, temperature, respirations, what we call vital signs. And then anybody that turns on a television knows that there are a lot of direct consumer advertising for different medications. And that kind of happened in the late 1990s. And then what we have seen as a country, and even in private practice and in addiction treatment, is that there's been more prescriptions given of these drugs and more issues with these drugs as far as drug overdose and unintentional drug injury. We know that, and actually in the past 13 years, it's probably been like a fivefold increase. We're seeing many more, 111% increase even in emergency room visits where people are getting into trouble. And when I say non-medical use of narcotics, I'm talking about the people that are taking a medication that maybe wasn't prescribed to them. So that's actually what we mean by non-medical use. Or they're taking the prescription that was prescribed, but they're taking it, let's say their doc said to take it four times a day, but they found that four times a day worked for a little while, and now they need to take four times a day to get the same effect. So it would be not as prescribed. Our statistics actually show that nearly 3 out of 4 prescription drug overdoses were actually caused by the narcotics, and the narcotics were received by not your own prescription, by taking a friend's prescription. You know, in today's economy, when you buy a prescription, let's say you broke your wrist or something like that, and you're given pain medication for the acute pain, chances are you're not going to throw that prescription away. You may save it. And we're seeing a lot of that, where even young family members are taking, you know, the prescriptions out of their parents' drug cabinets, and then getting into trouble with it. Other statistics even parallel this, that there's been a 300% increase in the sale of these drugs really over the past 14 years. So before, when I was in the field in the late 80s, when we talked about overdose deaths, we were really talking about like cocaine or heroin, but that's not the case anymore. Now it really is prescription drugs, and that's a problem because, you know, by definition, prescription, the perception is that they are a safe drug, but when you start taking them in combination, or you take the drug with alcohol or something like that, they're no longer safe. And we're seeing these statistics. You'll see on one of your slides talks about that for every death that we see, about 825 non-medical users. And again, by non-medical, I mean you're taking somebody else's drug, or you're taking your drug that was prescribed for a surgery, but now you're taking it because you just don't feel well that day, or you're taking it more frequently than you're supposed to. If we look at the pie graph slide, again, it talks about 3 out of 4 people who misuse the prescription drugs, and we're talking more painkillers because that's where most of our deaths are that involve painkillers, are getting it, obtaining it from a friend or relative. They know that it's usually one doc or a few docs that are prescribing it. There's been, those of you who are from Florida, especially the South Florida area, I mean, we had a real issue with pain medication and people coming from Kentucky and Mississippi, driving down to Florida because we had all these pain clinics. You know, unfortunately, they were staffed by a lot of physicians who were just there for the monetary value of what they could get from prescribing the pain medication, and not really a legitimate pain clinic where they were trying to help somebody that had chronic pain. I know that for us in the state of Florida, that has been rectified to a great extent, and a lot of those places have been closed down, but all of that was available. On the next slide, you're going to see different prescription narcotic names, and that's just really technical information. The bottom line is that we have many narcotics, pain pills, again, is what I mean by narcotics. And what I found interesting, really, in the last 2 weeks, there's FDA warning now that states that pain medication, the narcotic medication, is not recommended for long-term use. It's only in an acute situation. So if you go to the next slide, again, if you think that prescription medications are maybe in the younger group, you know, where they're taking out of their family's medicine cabinet, you'd actually be wrong, because if you look at the slide, the white is the prescription drugs, and you're going to see a dramatic rise, actually, from age 26 to greater than 55. And part of that we're seeing here, even in treatment at Hanley, where we have different units for different age groups. But a lot of, as we age and the physiological changes that occur with aging, you know, people who have been running their whole life, you know, now have knee pain, and they're getting prescriptions for narcotics, you know, for the pain, and then they may be taking that with something else. But the prescriptions that are being given to patients are definitely increasing in all age groups, especially in the older age groups. The next slide actually shows past year initiates of a specific drug. And what that means is how many people for the very first time started a drug. So marijuana is still high, and that has been the highest in our country for the last 20, 30 years that I'm aware of. But if you look at the next one, it's not the illicit drugs like the heroin and cocaine. It's really, again, the pain relievers. There have been studies out that have talked about Pharmageddon. I know that's a little dramatic, but it's what they mean by that is that the prescription drug abuse in our country is causing serious mortality, again, unintentional drug deaths. The mean age of first use with prescription drugs is about 21, but you're going to get higher risk as you get older. The next slide shows what the most recent treatment was received in the past year, and alcohol is still very high, marijuana, and then pain relievers. If you looked at pain relievers, tranquilizers, and stimulants that are all prescription drugs, you would see that that would be about 1447 in total, and that would actually be secondary to alcohol, not even the marijuana, as far as treatment for these. The next slide actually shows decedents, people that have died, and the substances that were identified. And again, it's the combination of prescription drugs, specifically the narcotics with the 6,608, and then the benzodiazepines. That's the class of drugs, the tranquilizers, again, the Xanax, the Ativan, the Valium, the Klonopin. And those are the things those are the drugs that I'm seeing the patients come in with here at our treatment center. And I know that treatment centers across the country are seeing those same statistics where it's those two classes of drugs that are being used. I understand, because we do have a very stressful society, and a lot of anti-anxiety agents are being used. But when you add that with narcotics, pain relievers for, and again, another medical condition, you can get into a lot of trouble. The next slide is a pie graph. I guess, I like pie graphs, but, again, 39% of all of those drugs that are 39% of the drugs listed on the left-hand side are all prescription drugs. So the prescription drugs being about 39%, alcohol being about 23%, and the anti-anxiety sedative medication, benzodiazepines, being about 21%. So we've really nationally have taken, have gone to prescription drugs as opposed to the illicit drugs that we were seeing really in the 70s and the 80s. So just as a synopsis, national perspective, our drug overdose deaths, that's, again, unintentional drug poisonings, are second only to car crashes in the United States today. That means our drug overdose deaths are second to car crashes and above homicides and suicides. Overdose is the number one injury-related killer among adults aged 35 to 54. So there has been, since the late 1990s, a fivefold increase in unintentional drug overdose deaths. And that's why I believe that people need to be educated and understand when they're taking their prescription drugs and they have this discussion with their physician that, you know, what are the side effects of this? Do I take it long term? Because this is a very real problem that we're seeing unbelievable numbers of deaths in our country. In Palm Beach County last year, we had one death every 26 hours. That's an amazing statistic. And from prescription drugs, you know, if we had like one death in a county in a state that was due to like the flu virus, it would be all over the news. So this, I believe, as a physician and as an addiction medicine specialist, prescription drugs is a very serious national problem and local problem. I put this slide in. This is the map, the unintentional drug poisoning in the United States. So if you live in Nebraska, that's a really good state to live in, has the lowest drug overdose death rate. I'm not sure exactly why. Maybe there's people that are from Nebraska that could tell me that. But we found a lot, actually 15 times higher the drug overdose death in both New Mexico and West Virginia. So this is the dilemma. What do you do when you have chronic pain? You know, if 50% of the patients across the board who have chronic pain also have a dependence, a drug and alcohol problem, then what do we do about that? What do we do about that for the patients? What do we do about that as clinicians to help our patients? Substance use disorder is a significant risk factor when we're starting to deal with acute pain and chronic pain. And there are tools for physicians to identify those at risk. Some of the risk factors, and it's not just for narcotic misuse, but you could say for the class of prescription drug misuse, is less than age 45. Obviously having some kind of substance use disorder, but even more than that, if they have a family history of drug and alcohol addiction, you want to be talking to your physician about that. The docs may not ask the question, but that's important for them to know because according to the risk tools that we do have available medically to identify patients that may be at more risk, that's important information that the physician would know. If there's another issue going on, what we call a co-occurring disorder, like a primary anxiety disorder or primary depressive disorder, you're at higher risk. And believe it or not, using tobacco, nicotine, if you become at higher risk for chemical dependency, because actually tobacco in the brain follows the same pathways as marijuana does. So when we talk about pain, we probably should identify pain first. And bottom line, pain is an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience. We've all had pain. Whether we had actual or potential tissue damage, and it's definitely, our perception of pain is definitely modified, you know, by our own experience, by our own memory, by, you know, our expectations that we're going to have pain or not have pain. And what's really important is that the patient knows that whatever their pain is, that that is validated. That they don't, you know, even if they're, whatever they're experiencing is true. And that's really important for a physician to know. When we talk about pain, we talk about the, it's the number one admitting diagnosis to the hospitals in the United States. It's the primary reason for missed work in the United States. It has a significant economic impact as far as lost income for the person and productivity, direct medical care costs. You're talking about greater than $100 billion a year. And as I talked about before, pain is one of the fifth vital signs now that came out in the late 1990s by a joint commission. So you have a balance that you have to achieve. You have to treat the pain, and you have to treat it adequately, but then you want to treat the pain appropriately. So years ago, I think that, and again, I can only speak for physicians, I think years ago, you know, we only treated cancer pain, what we call malignant pain. So, and we're very sparing with narcotics or other types of pain. And now we've kind of treated, you know, other kinds of pain, and the pendulum has swung maybe to the opposite end, where we're prescribing too many narcotics for pain. And we need to find that balance. The World Congress on Pain has done a lot of research on that, as well as the government. as far as, you know, the effects of pain, it, from a physical point of view, there's a lot of risk factors. You know, pain puts a lot of demands on our body as far as energy demands. If you're in pain, you don't get the same kind of restorative process that the body goes through, even for like wound healing or muscle breakdown. A lot of patients that have pain, you know, have disturbed sleep patterns, and that really is the time when our body restores itself during sleep. When you're in a lot of pain, you don't have as much movement, because if, you know, if you have a painful hip or a joint, you're not going to move it as much because that's kind of the body's protective mechanism. But then you may increase your risk for, you know, blood clots in the legs or the lungs. There's other issues that happen as far as fluids and electrolytes. And electrolytes, I mean like sodium. Most people know sodium. You know, where you may get swollen in different areas because of changes that actually pain makes, and then you're not feeling well, your blood pressure may increase, your heart rate increase. I mean, pain is what we call a central nervous system's like stimulant, a sympathetic kind of response. So it causes all of the, you know, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, and we have to obviously treat it because the person is having a hard time. I mean, if you have untreated pain, there really is a progressive isolation that occurs with that, not in all patients, but in extreme cases where, you know, if you're in a lot of pain, your appetite may be decreased. I'd have to be in a lot of pain for my appetite to be decreased, but we see that. I mean, in all seriousness, we see that. So the patients may lose weight, but then if they're in a lot of pain, they're not doing the regular physical exercise, so the weight loss that they're having is probably more muscle weight loss, which is not the good weight loss to have, and the muscle loss is not a good thing to have. You're not going to be as socially active, so, you know, instead of going out and obviously, you know, whatever your hobby is, you're going to isolate more. Your behavior, there are behavioral changes, you know, irritability, all of that is normal to untreated pain. You know, you have trouble focusing. You can have problems just even performing your regular activities of daily living, meaning like getting up out of bed, brushing your teeth, taking a shower, because the pain is interfering with all that. So, again, and pain does impair the immune function so that you're more susceptible to other kinds of illnesses, you know, if a flu bug comes along or somebody has an infection. So it's really, really important to identify the pain and manage the pain as soon as possible. When we talk about pain, again, we really do need to separate two different kinds of pain. We need to look at acute pain, which is, you know, generally known. So if you fall and break your leg, 99% of the time you're going to have pain. And that's well identified. You know, you get an x-ray. We know the exact treatment approach to that pain. And we can, you know, either surgically correct it or put a cast on it. And then, you know, it's pretty well, the duration is pretty well maybe 6 to 8 weeks, and then you may have total healing, or if you're a little older, it may take longer than that. But when we're talking about chronic pain, a lot of times the cause of the chronic pain is not well identified. And what I mean by chronic pain, by definition, it's pain that lasts at least greater than 3 months, but it's usually pain that lasts longer than 6 months. So you're talking about treating the pain and not necessarily treating a cure, you know, having a cure in the sense that there's an end date. Okay, this pain is going to be gone because my fracture is going to heal with immobilizing it, like with a cast or something. It's going to be healed in the next 6 to 8 weeks. Chronic pain is not necessarily like that. A lot of the chronic pain that we see are usually joint pains, you know, or in the muscle. So it could be myofascial pain syndrome, or it can be in that neck and back pain, or it may just be headaches and migraines. So we know that 20% of the population in all developed countries have chronic pain. So, again, this is something that needs to be dealt with by your practitioners, and it needs to be dealt with in an appropriate way. When we talk, the next slide is a brain, and that's a cross-section of a brain. And the reason I put this in there is severalfold. First of all, when we're talking about addiction, you see the slide that the area that says reward, those arrows, that's the area of the brain, as well as judgment, that's the area of the brain that we talk about when we talk about addiction, and what controls the chemicals in the brain that have to do with addiction and the things that happen in the brain that has to do with drug and alcohol addiction. When we're talking about pain, you'll see that the pain fibers, the ones that go to the brain and the ones that come back from the brain, are in the same area of the brain. And then if you look at memory, that's all in the same area of the brain, as well as if you look at, and it's not listed on this slide, but if you look at psychiatric, you know, anxiety, depression, all that's in the same area of the brain. So if you have a person that's coming in that had a family history of addiction, or they themselves had addiction in the past, and they have a pain issue, and then the pain issue has been so bad that they have a major depression on top of it, you're talking about all the same area of the brain. And it needs to be treated, that it will help all of those areas of the brain so that the person gets the best results. So again, when we talk about chronic pain, we're talking about what I call a biopsychosocial model, that you have to treat all aspects. So the quality of life, you have to look at the quality of life. How is the person functioning? You know, what does their work look like? Are they working? Do they have any recreation? You know, what's their psychological state? You know, are they depressed? Are they angry that they can't do the same things that they were able to do? Are they sleeping well? And then if you're not sleeping and you're angry and you're depressed and you're not able to go to work, I mean, that doesn't help self-esteem. It doesn't help. It has interpersonal and interpersonal consequences, you know, when you talk about marriage and family and relationships. You know, it certainly can affect sexual activity, intimacy. It has a big impact on the family. And then, of course, it has all the economic consequences and the health care costs and the disabilities. So, again, when we treat patients here at the Hanley Center that have addiction and maybe depression and chronic pain, we want to make sure that we treat all of those aspects. So we have wellness staff that deal with the patients. We have spiritual care staff that deal with the patients. We have psychology staff that deal with the patients. We have clinical staff that deal with the patients, and we have medical staff that deal with the patients. And we all meet as a treatment team so that we can discuss everything that's going on and help the patient deal with their chronic pain. Which brings me to, how do you manage chronic pain? Because all of this is well and good, and the statistics are there, and a lot of prescription drugs are, you know, put into place. And then if that person has a vulnerability for addiction and they're put on a prescription drug and then they become dependent on that drug and they have chronic pain, how do you get out of this sinking ship, so to speak? So, you know, we put into place certain treatment objectives. I mean, the first thing is we ask the patient on a scale of 1 to 10, and those of you who have had chronic pain have probably been asked this question, 0 being, well, 1 being low pain and 10 being the worst pain. First of all, where's your pain? A lot of times I'll get an answer, well, my pain is a 20. So it's obviously very high. It's even greater than a 10. But then we'll ask the patient, you know, where do you think your pain level that you could be that you would tolerate it? And most of the time I'll get an answer of, like, my pain level is like a 2 or 3. And I would be good with that. So that's our starting point. And, you know, again, our objective is to get the person back to, if they're going to return to work, to return to work, and to treat the pain as opposed to maybe just treating the symptoms. And let me explain that. When we deal with addiction, so the patient was legitimately put on a prescription pain medication. They may or may not have known that they had addiction in their family, but because of their circumstances, they had a pain issue that became a chronic pain issue, and then they had addiction in their family, and now they find themselves either having to go to more than one doctor for their to get the amount of pain medication that they need to treat the pain, or they find that even with taking more of the pain pills, that their pain's really not relieved. And this is what we call hyperalgesia, which means that the research that's been done is that people can have 50% more pain than they did even when they started on the pain medication after 2 years. So if you're on pain medication and your pain is not being relieved and you notice that you have to take more pain medication, or you have to take, you know, the pain medicine isn't working because then you're not sleeping, and then you have to take, you know, what we call the class of benzos, you know, or your anxiety level's high, that you have to take, you know, anxiety pills on top of it. It's important that maybe you look at other modalities, because that's one way of becoming dependent on those prescription drugs that really are not safe, that can be lethal. And I just want to pause for a second and say I'm not saying that there are not patients or people that have chronic pain that need to be on long-term pain medication. But even in those cases, it's important that you pick a pain medication that you're not going to have to keep increasing the dosage, and that has the least side effects, specifically a pain medication that will not cause you to stop breathing, because that's probably one of the most important factors that we see with long-term use of narcotics. So how do we do it? Here at Hanley, we use both medications and non-medications for the treatment of pain. What I have found interesting, I've been a doc for 35 years, what I have found interesting is that a lot of times I'll have a patient come in and, you know, they may have abused alcohol in the past and are using it now, but then they came in, they had a problem with you know, a hip fracture or a surgery that didn't go so well, and they have some chronic pain, but they're using narcotics, pain pills, opiates, all the same thing, and they're using that with the alcohol, so you actually get an enhanced effect of the drug on the brain when using both drugs. What I have found is sometimes the most simple things that a physician has to offer are not offered, like an anti-inflammatory medication. I can't tell you the amount of people that I see that come into treatment and they are not on something simple like ibuprofen or Aleve or all the prescription anti-inflammatories, even though their pain is based on inflammation. There are other classes of drugs that, when you look at how pain is conducted or how pain is expressed, actually decrease that conduction or that expression. And let me explain what I mean by that. I mean that if you have pain and those pain fibers, as you saw in that brain slide, go up to the brain, there are ways to actually block the conduction of that pain, the transmission of that pain, so to speak, to the brain, and the brain doesn't perceive the pain that you have. And some of those are under anticonvulsants like Neurontin or Lyrica. People are probably more familiar with Lyrica because they've seen plenty of commercials on television, but it's nerve pain, what we call neuropathic pain. We have other medications and medications that have been out for years and years that are not addictive and that can be used quite successfully with pain management. The other thing that we do here at Hanley is we use a lot of non-medication modalities. In the sense it's called ancillary modalities, but we'll use biofeedback. We'll use relaxation therapy. So, you know, teaching the person how to modulate, how to decrease their anxiety, because some of the issues that I've seen over and over again is even the fear of having the pain again. Let's say the pain is intermittent. Well, that's a very valid fear because you've been there and done that. You experience the pain, and then you're like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do if I have the pain again? So we help them with biofeedback or relaxation therapy, and it really does work. Yoga really works. We use physical therapy, and we use Aqua Wellness. pool therapy, you know, with no the water having no stress on the joints is really a good modality to help strengthen muscles and to help the physical well-being of the patient. When we talk about cognitive behavioral therapies, again, we're talking about perhaps meditation or what we call guided imagery. In other words, you're having some pain, you feel like you're getting more anxious, more upset, so we help teach the patients to bring themselves to a place that's pleasurable for them, you know, what is like the most relaxing place, the most serene place that you can think of in your life. And we help them, you know, just take, you know, deep breathing is important and to bring them back to that place. Acupuncture has been very successful for our patients dealing with chronic pain, and it's usually a combination of modalities that we use, as well as a TENS unit. That's a medical equipment that overstimulates a muscle that it actually relaxes, and neuromuscular massage therapy. Now, I'm not talking about Swedish massage. I'm talking about true neuromuscular massage where they're pinpoint where they're releasing muscles and help moving the inflammatory cells out of the area. So there are a lot of modalities available that, in my opinion, really should be used first. Again, not for acute pain, that acute fracture, but when someone's dealing with chronic pain, you want to exhaust all of those modalities before you put them on prescription narcotics for long-term use, because that's where we're seeing the unintentional drug deaths. One very important thing, especially with women, is that there are vitamin D levels in women that can be checked, and we know that even living in the sunny state of Florida, we have patients walk in with low vitamin D levels that are in chronic pain, and if their levels are at a certain point, like 75 to 99 specifically, that their pain levels improved. So there are tests, you know, blood tests that we do. There are a whole assessment, a multidiscipline type assessment where everybody comes together, looks at their own, you know, their area of expertise and come up with a plan to treat the patient as a whole to get the best outcome. So, Kim, I don't know if people have questions or...
Thank you, Dr. Krantz. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question. Once again, it is star 1 if you have a question today. And I do have a question. I'll open that line. Caller, your line is open. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, this is Leilani, and I'm wondering if you have specific help for clients or patients with migraine pain that's pretty chronic, maybe 15 days a month.
Yes. We see a lot of patients with migraine pain. Now, are you saying that the patient has migraine pain and also has an addiction, or they just have a medical complaint of migraine pain?
No addiction, but they could be at risk if they don't receive the proper pain treatment, like you said.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's a lot of medications out there now for migraine pain. You know, Imitrex is one of them, and a lot in that class of drugs that has worked very well. What we've seen here is that a lot of times the migraine pain, because the pain being so severe, also affects, you know, the muscles in the neck, and especially in women, have a tendency to keep their stress in that area. So we use a lot of neuromuscular massage and acupuncture with the non-addictive medications for that, like Imitrex. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say brand names, but
okay. And could you define the transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation? Is that like Botox?
No. It's called a TENS unit. And what it does is it stimulates the muscle and or the nerve to the point that they relax. It like overstimulates it to the point that they relax.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Once again, it is star one if you have a question today. And one final reminder, it is star one to ask a question or make a comment. And as it appears there are no further questions at this time, to help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask other questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please tell us the degree to which you agree or disagree with the following statements. This session provided me with a basic understanding of the epidemic of prescription addiction. If you strongly agree, press star 1, agree, star 2, disagree, star 3, strongly disagree, star 4, and we'll pause for just a moment. And our next question, this session educated me on alternatives to prescription treatment for chronic pain. For strongly agree, press star 1, agree, star 2, disagree, star 3, or strongly disagree, star 4. And the third question, overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Strongly agree, star 1, agree, star 2, disagree, star 3, or strongly disagree, star 4. Once again, we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a chance to signal. Question number 4, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, star 2 if you do not agree. And our final question, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with substance abuse issues. I am a person with a substance abuse issue. Press star 1. I am a family member of someone with a substance abuse issue. Press star 2. I am a treatment provider for someone with a substance abuse issue. Star 3. Or other, star 4. And that does conclude our survey today. Ms. Papa George, I'll turn the conference back to you for additional or closing remarks.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Dr. Krantz, for speaking today. If you have additional questions for Dr. Krantz, please contact her at the web address listed on today's PowerPoint. If you have specific questions regarding treatment or your policy, please contact the outpatient team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Drug and Alcohol Awareness Seminar on October 16th. Our topic next month will be Addiction 101. Thank you.
And that does conclude our seminar today. Thank you all for your participation.